conquest. No, says the conqueror, don't assume that because I love action, I've had to forget how to think. On the contrary, I can thoroughly define what I believe, for I believe it firmly, and I see it surely and clearly. Beware of those who say, I know this too well to be able to express it, for if they cannot do so, this is because they don't know it, or because out of laziness they stopped at the outer crust. I have not many opinions. At the end of a life, man notices that he has spent years becoming sure of a single truth. But a single truth, if it is obvious, is enough to guide an existence. As for me, I decidedly have something to say about the individual. One must speak of him bluntly, and if need be, with the appropriate contempt. A man is more a man through the things he keeps to himself than through those he says. There are many things that I shall keep to myself, but I firmly believe that all those who have judged the individual have done so with much less experience than we on which to base their judgment. The intelligence, the stirring intelligence, perhaps foresaw what it was essential to note, but the era, its ruins, and its blood overwhelm us with facts. It was possible for ancient nations, and even for more recent ones down to our machine age, to weigh one against the other the virtues of society and of the individual, to try to find out which was to serve the other. To begin with, that was possible by virtue of that stubborn aberration in man's heart according to which human beings were created to serve or be served. In the second place, it was possible because neither society nor the individual had yet revealed all their ability. I have seen bright minds express astonishment at the masterpieces of Dutch painters born at the height of the bloody wars in Flanders, be amazed by the prayers of Silesian mystics brought up during the frightful 30 Years' War. Eternal values survive secular turmoils before their astonished eyes. But there has been progress since. The painters of today are deprived of such serenity. Even if they have basically the heart the Creator needs, I mean the closed heart, it is of no use. For everyone, including the saint himself, is mobilized. This is perhaps what I have felt most deeply. At every form that miscarries in the trenches, at every outline, metaphor, or prayer crushed under steel, the eternal loses around. Conscious that I cannot stand aloof from my time, I have decided to be an integral part of it. This is why I esteem the individual only because he strikes me as ridiculous and humiliated. Knowing that there are no victorious causes, I have a liking for lost causes. They require an uncontaminated soul, equal to its defeat as to its temporary victories. For anyone who feels bound up with this world's fate, the clash of civilizations has something agonizing about it. I have made that anguish mine at the same time that I wanted to join in. Between history and the eternal, I have chosen history, because I like certainties. Of it, at least, I am certain, and how can I deny this force crushing me? There always comes a time when one must choose between contemplation and action. This is called becoming a man. Such wrenches are dreadful. But for a proud heart there can be no compromise. There is God or time, that cross or this sword. This world has a higher meaning that transcends its worries, or nothing is true but those worries. One must live with time and die with it, or else elude it for a greater life. I know that one can compromise and live in the world while believing in the eternal. That is called accepting. But I loathe this term, and want all or nothing. If I choose action, don't think that contemplation is like an unknown country to me. But it cannot give me everything, and deprived of the eternal, I want to ally myself with time. I do not want to put down to my account either nostalgia or bitterness, and I merely want to see clearly. I tell you, tomorrow you will be mobilized. For you and me, that is a liberation. The individual can do nothing, and yet he can do everything. In that wonderful unattached state, you understand why I exalt and crush him at one and the same time. It is the world that pulverizes him, and I who liberate him. I provide him with all his rights. Conquerors know that action is in itself useless. There is but one useful action, that of remaking man and the earth. I shall never remake men, but one must do as if, for the path of struggle leads me to the flesh. Even humiliated, the flesh is my only certainty. I can live only on it. The creature is my native land. This is why I have chosen this absurd and ineffectual effort. This is why I am on the side of the struggle. The epic lends itself to this, as I have said. Hitherto, the greatness of a conqueror was geographical. It was measured by the extent of the conquered territories. There is a reason why the word has changed in meaning and has ceased to signify the victorious general. The greatness has changed camp. It lies in protest and the blind alley sacrifice. There, too, it is not through a preference for defeat. Victory would be desirable, but there is but one victory, and it is eternal. That is the one I shall never have. That is where I stumble and cling. A revolution is always accomplished against the gods, beginning with the revolution of Prometheus, the first of modern conquerors. It is man's demands made against his fate. The demands of the poor are but a pretext. Yet I can seize that spirit only in its historical act, and that is where I make contact with it. Don't assume, however, that I take pleasure in it. Opposite the essential contradiction, I maintain my human contradiction. I establish my lucidity in the midst of what negates it. I exalt man before what crushes him, and my freedom, my revolt, and my passion come together then in that tension, that lucidity, and that vast repetition. Yes, man is his own end, and he is his only end. If he aims to be something, it is in this life. Now, I know it only too well. Conquerors sometimes talk of vanquishing and overcoming, but it is always overcoming oneself that they mean. You are well aware of what that means. Every man has felt himself to be the equal of a god at certain moments. At least, this is the way it is expressed. But this comes from the fact that in a flash he felt the amazing grandeur of the human mind. The conquerors are merely those among men who are conscious enough of their strength to be sure of living constantly on those heights and fully aware of that grandeur. It is a question of arithmetic, of more or less. The conquerors are capable of the more, but they are capable of no more than man himself when he wants. This is why they never leave the human crucible, plunging into the seething soul of revolutions. There they find the creature mutilated, but they also encounter there the only values they like and admire, man and his silence. This is both their destitution and their wealth. There is but one luxury for them, that of human relations. How can one fail to realize that in this vulnerable universe, everything that is human and solely human assumes a more vivid meaning? Taut faces, threatened fraternity, such strong and chaste friendship among men. These are the true riches, because they are transitory. In their midst, the mind is most aware of its powers and limitations, that is to say, its efficacy. Some have spoken of genius. But genius is easy to say, I prefer the intelligence. It must be said that it can be magnificent then. It lights up this desert and dominates it. It knows its obligations and illustrates them. It will die at the same time as this body. But knowing this constitutes its freedom. We are not ignorant of the fact that all churches are against us. A heart so keyed up eludes the eternal, and all churches, divine or political, lay claim to the eternal. Happiness and courage, retribution or justice, are secondary ends for them. It is a doctrine they bring, and one must subscribe to it. But I have no concern with ideas or with the eternal. The truths that come within my scope can be touched with the hand. I cannot separate from them. This is why you cannot base anything on me. Nothing of the conqueror lasts, not even his doctrines. At the end of all that, despite everything, is death. We know also that it ends everything. This is why those cemeteries all over Europe, which obsess some among us, are hideous. People beautify only what they love, and death repels us and tires our patience. It, too, is to be conquered. The last Carrara, a prisoner in Padua, emptied by the plague and besieged by the Venetians, ran screaming through the halls of his deserted palace. He was calling on the devil and asking him for death. This was a way of overcoming it, and it is likewise a mark of courage characteristic of the Occident to have made so ugly the places where death thinks itself honored. In the rebel's universe, death exalts injustice. It is the supreme abuse. Others, without compromising either, have chosen the eternal and denounced the illusion of this world. Their cemeteries smile amid numerous flowers and birds. That suits the conqueror and gives him a clear image of what he has rejected. He has chosen, on the contrary, the black iron fence or the potter's field. The best among the men of God occasionally are seized with fright, mingled with consideration and pity for minds that can live with such an image of their death. Yet those minds derive their strength and justification from this. Our fate stands before us, and we provoke him, less out of pride than out of awareness of our ineffectual condition. We, too, sometimes feel pity for ourselves. It is the only compassion that seems acceptable to us, a feeling that perhaps you hardly understand, and that seems to you scarcely virile. Yet the most daring among us are the ones who feel it. But we call the lucid ones virile, and we do not want a strength that is apart from lucidity. Let me repeat that these images do not propose moral codes and involve no judgments. They are sketches. They merely represent a style of life. The lover, the actor, or the adventurer plays the absurd, but equally well, if he wishes, the chaste man, the civil servant, or the president of the republic. It is enough to know and to mask nothing. In Italian museums are sometimes found little painted screens that the priest used to hold in front of the face of condemned men to hide the scaffold from them. The leap in all its forms, rushing into the divine or the eternal, surrendering to the illusions of the everyday or of the idea. All these screens hide the absurd. But there are civil servants without screens, and they are the ones of whom I mean to speak. I have chosen the most extreme ones. At this level, the absurd gives them a royal power. It is true that those princes are without a kingdom, but they have this advantage over others. They know that all royalties are illusory. They know that is their whole nobility, and it is useless to speak in relation to them of hidden misfortune or the ashes of disillusion. Being deprived of hope is not despairing. The flames of earth are surely worth celestial perfumes. Neither I nor anyone can judge them here. They are not striving to be better, they are attempting to be consistent. If the term wise man can be applied to the man who lives on what he has without speculating on what he has not, then they are wise men. One of them, a conqueror but in the realm of mind, a Don Juan but of knowledge, an actor but of the intelligence, knows this better than anyone. You nowise deserve a privilege on earth and in heaven for having brought to perfection your dear little meek sheep. You nonetheless continue to be at best a ridiculous dear little sheep with horns and nothing more, even supposing that you do not burst with vanity and do not create a scandal by posing as a judge. In any case, it was essential to restore to the absurd reasoning more cordial examples. The imagination can add many others, inseparable from time and exile, who likewise know how to live in harmony with a universe without future and without weakness. This absurd, godless world is then peopled with men who think clearly and have ceased to hope. And I have not yet spoken of the most absurd character, who is the creator.